Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, the weekly mortgage market update, providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome, everybody, to another broadcast of Lickin' on Lending. It's mortgage professionals putting together a program to mortgage professionals, broadcast out to you across the country. We get so much feedback, and we thank you so much for your feedback. Continue to email us, broadcast about the broadcast feedback, and we're excited to have you here with us again today. Later in the program, we're going to be talking about the future mortgage banking. In fact, we're starting a series on the future mortgage banking. And today we're going to be talking about the secondary markets. What is life? What could life be like in the very likely probability of a Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac going away? We're going to get into that. We've got a special guest with us, Don Brown of Secondary Interactive. He'll be on the program a little bit later. But as we do each and every week, let's get into interest rates. Joe Farr, good to have you with us. What's going on in the world of rates, Joe? Well, let's see here. We got to go find Joe in the panel here. I think we may have missed turning on his microphone. So we're going to try to get Joe located here real fast. Apologize for any delays on that. While we hook him up, let's get Alice on the phone. Good to have you back with us, Alice. Sorry to, again, for you having to be miss the programs, but love to have you on with us now. Alice, why don't we, until we get Joe on and going strong here, why don't we cover the traffic report, and then we'll get Joe on right after that.
All right, will do. No problem. Well, as you all know, we've got a lot to talk today about what's going on with the agencies, with Fannie and Freddie. But in the meantime, now you see also a House Bill 940 coming out to try and set the framework for covered bonds. The MBA, the Mortgage Bankers Association, reported on this, and not only their NewsLink, but also their Mortgage Action Alliance. And we want to make sure that you recall we did have several shows on this topic to explain what are covered bonds, how does that market currently work, because it's been very limited here but successful over in Europe. So the framework legislation is H.R. 940. We're definitely going to be watching that closely. It was just introduced just last week, June 23rd. We're also watching, obviously, QRM and QM. As you all might know by now, the qualified residential mortgage definition is a part of risk retention, and that the credit risk retention proposal by the agencies has been extended, the comment period has been extended until August 1st. Here's the best way to comment, the simplest way I can describe it on the radio for you. Prepare an email to regs.comments, so regs.comments@federalreserve.gov. And in the subject line, put R-1411. That's your document. And it's called the Credit Risk Retention Proposed Rule. And then just in the body of the email, you can state your feelings. Facts are better, but, you know, feelings have a tendency to come out in there as well. If you want to view other folks' comments to kind of get a flavor for what everyone's talking about, you can certainly go to the Federal Reserve website, so federalreserve.gov, and go to their press release section. They had a press release on both March 29th and March 31st, I believe it was. Those two dates will give you links to be able to view the comments that have been posted and also post comments through there if you want. Now, there's a lot of discussion about the fact that Dodd-Frank does not reference setting a loan-to-value limitation. We've got lots of folks on our side from consumer action groups to small, large lenders, you name it, who say we've got to come up with a way to get this to work, to define that product. What is a loan that would be exempt from risk retention without having a loan-to-value requirement in there or hard stops on ratios? Those are the main things. I think we have a definition in place. I haven't heard too many people talk about it, but my humble opinion is why not go back to the way we defined non-traditional lending products? We got a handle on that. You know, how would you define non-traditional in terms of, you know, adjustable option arms? That's really what the intent was, to not get back into that world of lending. So we may even be able to kind of give reference to, don't we have something in place that starts to define this? We also have qualified mortgage, which that comment period is going to be expiring not until July 21st. So same thing, you can comment the same way, but its docket number is R1417. So they have two different numbers, whether you're commenting on QRM or QM. So I think we in QM, we've really got to get automated underwriting into this. We've got to get the benefits of mortgage insurance into both of these to be able to talk about, you know, what about a loan that receives an approved eligible, and then, you know, subsequently take a look at our performance standards within that. So lots of things that we can work with to be able to at least keep pushing this down the track. We also have House Bill 1859 that is on the subject of what we're talking about today with Gary Peters and John Campbell trying to come up with a solution for Fannie and Freddie. This is very close to the McGee proposal floated by the MBA, and we'll be talking a little bit about that later in the program.
I love that name, McGee.
McGee. I know. I don't know if that's going to stick or not. I have a hard time saying it. all I think of is hamburgers and french fries every time I hear it. So then we also have House Bill 1121 that's proposing to replace the director of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau with a five-person commission. So none of these House bills that I've talked about have actually been put on the calendar or even listed. They're still in their very early stages right now. So we're hoping to get some legs on that. And that includes the FHA Regulatory Improvement Act that was floated out. That's House Bill 1977. Still doesn't have a lot of legs behind it, although it has a few more co-sponsors as it moves forward. So we're also watching House Bill 1754 for the FHA maximum loan limits to be moved for to be kept at their current rate right now to follow more closely with Fannie and Freddie. And, of course, watch your implementation dates. My final note here, we have implementation dates in July for your new Equal Credit Opportunity Act adverse action notice disclosure is going to change. Now, your loan origination software providers should be getting that into the systems for you. It's really about making sure we're including the credit score information. And then also your risk-based pricing disclosure that you give out with application potentially, make sure that's going to reflect the actual credit score used in the loan decision in the version that you give to the borrower. That, too, is July 21st. So a little less than a month away for a couple of forms you want to make sure you're ready for. And after that, Dave, I'm going to pass it back off to you. Do we have Joe back on the line?
Yeah. Well, we've got a new control panel that our the Blog Talk, which we broadcast through, has provided for us. But it's got some new twists and turns in it today. So Joe is in the process. We see him on the line, but we're in the process of getting him connected back into the broadcast. For some reason, his voice over IP is struggling with it today. So we will have him on in just a minute. But again, you're going to want to stay tuned throughout the whole broadcast as we are going to be talking about the future of mortgage banking. Certainly what we have to talk about regarding the secondary markets is going to be of utmost interest to anyone in the industry, because without the secondary markets, we really have we're back to a portfolio lending world, and that's not going to happen. So what will happen? Stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break. Joe Farr, good to have you on the line.
Yes.
So good.
Okay,
you're good. There. Good. We got you in. So glad to hear. So let's now go to Joe Farr. What's going on in interest rates today, Joe?
Well, Dave, it's been a pretty quiet morning today. The MBS price is about where they ended last week. And this morning, core PCE, personal consumption expenditures, came out. And that's one of the Fed's preferred inflation gauges, and the reading this morning was up 0.3 when 0.2 was expected. But yeah, it's not a big miss. The annual rate is still only 1.2%. But you know, it's much like core CPI. That measure has has increased each of the last 6 months, so it's certainly trending higher. And you know, at some point, it's going to become problematic. In addition to that, haven't seen the auction results, but there was a 2-year Treasury auction that went off at 1 o'clock Eastern time. So we'll see if that's having any impact. The 2-year Treasury is usually not you know, as significant to the mortgage market as the 10 and the 30 and the 7. But anyway, so not
so
a whole lot
going
today.
Not a whole lot.
Last
but
week we saw.
Yeah.
Last week it was all about the Fed and Greece, and you know, this week we've still got Greece. We'll talk about that some in a minute. But you know, the Fed really didn't identify any tremendous surprises, but they did reduce their outlook for second half GDP or full year 2011 GDP. They've still got GDP picking up in the second half of the year. They provided no hint at further quantitative easing, and you know, that program ends this week. So the Fed's always a significant influence on the mortgage market. But last week, the concerns over the Greek debt really caused a bit of a flight to safety. The European Union and the International Monetary Fund they've reached an agreement to bail out Greece, but that agreement calls for a significant reduction in government spending, as well as some increasing taxes to get their financials back in order. And the question is going to be, are they going to, will the politicians have the will to get that done? You've seen highlights of the rioting in the streets. Once you've given things to people for so long, it's sure hard to take it away, isn't it? But
It really is. It really is.
Yeah, we'll talk about that in a minute.
We will be, yes.
But also last week we saw some new and existing home sale numbers. They were pretty much as expected because what was expected was pretty low. Both
yeah.
measures were slightly lower than what they were the month before, but no real surprise to the marketplace. But this week, let's talk about this week, because that Greek debt situation is going to come to a head on Wednesday. Wednesday in Greece, the parliament set to vote on the measures that both the European Union and the IMF have indicated they have to pass in order to get the bailout money.
Interesting.
There are some 300 people in the parliament, and the government, in an effort, the side trying to pass this measure believes they've got a 5-vote cushion. All right, so it's really pretty tight given the consequences.
It's tight, yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, really interesting.
If they pass it, then that's going to remove a bit of uncertainty from the marketplace. I mean, there's still issues, but that's going to remove a bit of uncertainty if they don't pass it. And if they do pass it, I think you'll see more of the scenes with people showing their dislike for the measure in the streets of Greece. If they don't pass it, that's going to open up a whole new realm of uncertainty. And as we've seen in the past, as things are uncertain, the world tends to invest in those of the assets that are the safest, and that right now is U.S. government guaranteed fixed rate, you know, Treasury and MBS. So, you know, if they don't pass it, we might see a little bit of a flight to quality and an improvement, a pickup in demand of mortgages and mortgage-backed securities, and an improvement in rates.
Interesting.
Also this week, we have the more meetings on the U.S. debt limit. You know, given what I just said about the strength of the world looking at the U.S. economy and its government-guaranteed assets. Here now we're going to talk about, you know, U.S. debt limits, and those talks are going to be of great interest to the market. Hopefully we'll see some progress made there. We're auctioning off 2s, 5s, and 7s, 2s today, 5s and 7s tomorrow and Wednesday, and that's coming at the end of QE2, you know, and so no real large expectation to to see a big effect of the end of QE2. It's been so well known for so long, but you know, anytime it does come to an end, we'll be watching to see what the market reaction is, if any.
Yeah, I wonder, it would be interesting, Joe, to also think, I mean, the fact that we're not going to have a QE3, I wonder if there's not more relief about that. I think the general commentary that I hear out there is that, you know, a QE3 would, in fact, not be well received. We did, you know, did we get the effects of the QE2? I guess that's a whole nother segment to get into that. But do you anticipate interest rates, you know, stabilizing as a result of this? Any effects of the interest rates as a result of QE2?
Yeah, I wouldn't, not as a result of the end of QE2 and the fact that there is no QE3. That's just been too well known. The market's already built that in.
Good.
So that's pretty much it. We do have, you know, some pending home sales on Wednesday. Friday's got the ISM index to be released at 10. That's the most significant of the economic announcements for the week. So that's it.
That's it. Well, good to have you back. Sorry for not getting you connected earlier with this new control panel we have. We'll work through the bugs of that. But good to have you on, Joe. Appreciate you providing this update each and every week. Folks, we'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility for the past few weeks. Intraday price changes seem the rule rather than the exception. Have you been surprised by a midday price change? Have you been frustrated as you locked a loan just ahead of a price movement? Found it difficult to explain to a customer why the rate you quoted is no longer available? MBS Quoteline can eliminate these frustrations. MBS Quoteline monitors Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and Ginnie Mae mortgage-backed security prices in real time. It makes the information conveniently available on your desktop, smartphone, or by email or text message. These are the same prices used to set mortgage rates each morning and to issue midday price changes when significant movement occurs. With MBS Quoteline, you'll never be out of touch with the market, whether you're in the office or on the road. See for yourself what MBS Quoteline can do for you. Go to MBSQuoteline.com to start a risk-free two-week trial. MBSQuoteline.com. 646-716-4972. The Lickin' On Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lickin.
Welcome back, everybody. We're enjoying just this new control panel. It's so much fun when technology changes. Enhancements are a good thing. And talking about enhancements, you need to be working on enhancing your bottom line. And we've got the Profit Doctor to help us fix what's ailing that bottom line. Andy Schell, good to have you with us. Are you on, and can you give us an update on from the Profit Doctor?
Hello, hello, Dave. Can you hear me now? Hello.
Wait, can you? Yeah.
Can you hear me now? Well, when you were talking about enhancements, I thought you were going to say something else, so I'm glad you went where you went. Well, today's guest, as we all know, is Don Brown, president of one of the hedging companies in the country. So today, I'm going to talk a little bit about opportunities in hedging and how that can enhance your bottom line. How's that? We know that you know, hedging or pipeline risk management is you know, one of the most exciting areas of mortgage banking, and it's also one of the most complicated aspects of mortgage banking. Excuse me. The benefits of hedging can add 50 basis points to the bottom line, you know, probably as little as 25. We've seen it as much as 150 a couple of years ago, but you know, 25 to 50 is kind of the ballpark. And so that's just straight to the bottom line, but there are risks to manage. And it's possible to get these kind of results. We work with a lot of companies who get good consistent results in their hedging, but it's not easy. Excuse me. Don't think of it as easy. You don't just flick a switch and it happens. There's a lot to it to make it work right. You know, even in a best effort structure, there can be risks. Well, you know, if the locks aren't properly recorded or properly entered in with the investor, or what if the locks aren't locked on purpose because somebody in the secondary marketing department is going to play the market and go uncovered in their open position? You know, the best hedging advisors, the best hedging companies, when I was at B of A even, we never had uncovered positions. We always covered. So why are these little mortgage companies thinking that they're smart enough to play the market? It just astounds me. But in a best efforts lock, one of the things that's interesting is that what happens if your investor goes out of business and your locks are worthless? You know, in that case, with a best efforts lock, you have nothing. If you had an open hedge position, a forward TBA or just a forward TBA, if you had an open hedge position, your coverage would be in place and you'd have better counterparty risk than best efforts lock in that case. So as we get into this, just a real quick refresher, stuff we've talked about many times on the webinars we've taught, Dave. A lock commitment to a borrower is a contractual obligation that creates interest rate risk for the mortgage bank, and this interest rate risk can result in a loss to the mortgage bank if the position is not properly managed. Not properly managed, that's the key. So managing well interest rate risk is the key responsibility of the secondary marketing department. So what happens is investors issue rates, or really what they are is their future purchase price quotes. The investor
That's pretty wild.
Yeah, well, that's what it is, because they're agreeing to purchase. They're giving us rates today for things that they're going to purchase from us in 15, 20, 30, 40, whatever days in the future. So they're future purchase price quotes to the mortgage bank, and we in secondary marketing then take those investor rates and we mark them up to cover our operating expenses, because we have to cover our operating expenses and any of the commissions, and we know we want to make a profit, so we're going to add profit in, and then we're going to come up with a new set of rates that we're going to distribute out to our origination team as a rate sheet or as a, you know, through our pricing system. And it's the job of secondary marketing to then preserve this marked up price, or what we call margin. We're going to preserve this margin from the time of the lock until it's sold to the investor, either under a best efforts or mandatory or AOT commitment. So one quick side note, Dave, you know this. Actually, a best efforts commitment is a mandatory commitment, but with a conditional provision. The mandatory aspect of it is if you close it, you will sell it. That's
right.
What the recommendation is. The condition is if it closes. So if it doesn't close, you don't sell it. If it does, you do. If rates improve and you take a lock and you move it somewhere else and that loan closes, that's a contract breach. You're in contract
exactly
breach
right.
with your first investor. And investors have started charging lenders for the hedge costs, because the lenders track the loan in MERS, see if it closed. If it closed somewhere else, you broke your commitment with the investor, you breached your commitment, they send you a bill, and you've damaged your ongoing relationship with them, because they know now that you're not going to do what you said you're going to do. So, you know, this is one of the reasons why it's important to have a centralized lock desk. You've got to be able to control this really, really well. And so, as we're talking about hedging and hedging opportunities and picking up this 50 basis points that Don's company can help you get, the most important element of managing a mandatory AOT position is understanding the ability to predict the future behavior of the pipeline. So it's a lot about predicting the future, and we predict the future based on past behavior and other market dynamics. But having information is the key, and predicting pipeline behavior means we have to have accurate loan-level data. We've got to know the rate, the loan amount, the LTV, the loan status, loan condition, and a whole bunch of other stuff. And all this data that we need in order to properly manage the position, Don's company can do it. When they get all this stuff, you got to get the proper data out. That means you've got to have systems that are accurately capturing the data. That means in the branches, too. The staff
right.
must be trained to understand what they're entering in and why it's important. Because if you get garbage in the main office or out of the branches, it flows up to the various systems, and you got bad stuff, you get bad positions, and bad things happen. We don't want to do that. We want to have good data, accurate data. Because then what happens is all this stuff goes into the systems, and then all this data has to get from the LOS and the operating system, along with all the info about loan pricing from the pricing system, all into the hedging system. So you got all these different systems that have to be able to talk to each other for this thing to all work right. And it's important that the system interface be done perfectly. I cannot overstate the importance of having the data interface working well between the systems. It is just absolutely important, and it turns out Don's company has an amazing solution for this very point. Not everybody does, but you got to have accurate data into the system. Once the system data is entered, the data in the system then has to be moving around between all these other systems correctly, because a pull-through calculation is the most important aspect of a mortgage bank, and it must be done correctly every time, the first time, no exceptions, because if you don't, then you get wrong positions and bad things happen. It's just don't even go there. Just do it right the first time. So as the pipeline data is accurately and correctly moving between all these systems, and the hedge advisor can then produce good reports and the shock reports and all the essential information you need to be able to run the positions. So the point here, Dave, is getting good reports that are understandable by management is essential. sometimes when you talk to the hedge advisors, you have no idea what they're talking about. They throw a bunch of reports with a bunch of numbers, and they say, here, look at this. This means that. Well, you know what? Make sure you understand. Don't just take their word for it.
So
understand
cool.
the reports. Get them to train you and teach you and show you. And, you know, it doesn't even matter if your hedge advisor, let's say your hedge advisor does all the hedging for the World Bank and the IMF, the International Monetary Fund. Let's say you got the biggest hedge advisor in the world.
Can't get much more complicated than that. Yep.
Yeah. And you know what? If your data is not correct or if the reports are not understandable, it doesn't matter if they're the best in the world. It doesn't work for you, and you need to get another advisor.
That's right.
So as I start heading to wrap this up, a couple of quick points here. Hedging is complicated, and it can make a lot of money. But you need to get a system that supports hedging and an advisor who gets you the information you need when you need it. You know, this applies to everything in technology. In all aspects of a technology assessment, it is important to have systems that meet the needs of the lenders, not just anything that works, but something that meets the needs of the lender. I was watching the movie Secondhand Lion yesterday. You remember that movie, Dave?
It's a great movie.
Two brothers that are older kind of adopt their nephew. Seen the movie many
yep.
times. Really fun movie. Well, at the end of the movie, there's this great scene where the two older brothers who are rich, who lived on this old, beaten-up, run-down farm, big farm, lots of acres, and they've got this 100-foot pond out in the back. And so they had all this money. They were rich. So they bought a 90-foot yacht and put it inside the 100-foot pond. You got this great, big, huge yacht and this little bitty pond. You know, it's a great image of over-delivery or over-engineered. You know, it's important to match the system with the need that you're trying to deliver. If all you need is a rowboat, then get a rowboat. You don't need a great big huge system. You need the system that works. You need a system that delivers the results you need for your business based on where you are today and where you're going to be in several years. So get what you need, not what you want. Pay attention to system ROI. Putting a yacht in a pond is not the best application of a system ROI. You need to buy what you need. You also need to get hire advisors that bring tangible value. And if you really aren't sure what to do, you know, call Dave. He'll tell you. Call us. But it's important to get systems
yeah.
that work. And a hedge advisor who consistently accesses pull-through, which is what Don's company does, and get you the right reports on a timely basis. That is just, if you're going to be in hedging, you have to have this. And, you know, wait to get the yacht until your pond is the size of an ocean.
A little bit bigger. Before you get the 90-foot yacht, wait till you got something bigger than a 100-foot pond. Yep, that's
exactly. Well, there you go, Dave. That's the profit doctor for the day.
If you'd like to
That's so good. Well, we appreciate that. Well, I apologize. We've got we're working
operator.
With one of the lines here. We've got to find out which one's going crazy here for us. But anyway, Andy, thank you so much. I think the point of having accurate information is probably one of the most critical. Guys like Don, they do a great job. They've got great systems, and I can't wait to get him on the program here in just a few minutes. Really does a good job of gathering it. But that garbage in, garbage out, that's a big one. And so many people are expanding right now, branches, adding on branches. And they're not taking the time to make sure that that data is accurate. Such a good point. Thank you so much there, Profit Doctor.
You bet, Dave. Thanks.
We'll be right back after this brief break.
Economic uncertainty has created a tremendous amount of market volatility. Mortgage Banking Solutions is the preeminent management consulting firm to the residential mortgage lending industry. No other firm in the U.S. offers the menu of services or the level of expertise to the industry. If you're looking for help converting from best efforts to hedging, or need help with bookkeeping to know your profit per loan, if you are interested in making the transition from broker to banker, or if you just need a roadmap for success, Mortgage Banking Solutions' primary focus is to enable executives to take their business to the next level and guide them down a path towards success and profitability. With over 300 combined years of experience in all facets of mortgage lending, the Mortgage Banking Solutions team of professionals has the expertise and know-how to help you accomplish your goals. New warehouse lines of credit, broker to banker transitions, transitioning to hedging, financial and accounting services, or meeting your capitalization needs. If you need help with these or any other aspects of your business, please contact a Mortgage Banking Solutions sales team to see how we can help you at 512-977-9900. That's 512-977-9900. Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level.
All right, here's where we're going to get into some great, exciting stuff about the future of mortgage banking. There's a lot of exciting topics we're going to be talking about. And by the way, we're going to be doing a series of broadcasts on the future of mortgage banking. There's going to be at least four parts to this. We're going to cover virtually every aspect of the industry. But today, we're starting at what is probably one of the most critical, and that is, what is the future of Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac, and what is the implications if they go away? Today we have a special guest, Don Brown, who is the founder and president of Secondary Interactive. Secondary Interactive provides pipeline risk management, best execution, loan allocation, software, and services to the mortgage bankers throughout the country. Someone we've come to get to know and many of our clients are using. Don has been in the capital markets industry since 2001. He graduated from Northwestern University and the University of Colorado School of Law. School of Law, Don, my goodness, you're an attorney in the background. I didn't know that. Good to have you on the program.
David, I'm thrilled to be here. Thanks for including me today. And, it is a dark secret. I am a recovering lawyer. So. I try to go to my meetings and stay on the right path there. So
stay on the right path. Well, you know what? It takes a Philadelphia attorney to be on top of all that's going on. As Alice reports each and every week, it seems like the legal profession is smack dab, the legislative side of it anyway, is smack dab in the middle of our industry like never before. Good to have you be with us, Don. And Joe had suggested we have you on as a guest. I'm so thrilled. As Andy's show was in your offices just here recently, came back with a glowing report of the things that you're doing and how you're going about it. Folks, if you do not have a company like Don working with you, you need to get a hold of him. We'll give you information how to get a hold of Don after this segment. Joe, I want to make sure we have you connected into the call here again with the.
I believe I'm on.
You're on.
All right, good.
Good to know when all the technology works and you sound better this time. Okay, let's get into the topic, the various proposals that are out there right now. There are several that would, if enacted, have result of no government guarantee. In other words, Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are getting out of the business other than Fannie or FHA and HUD. So, Don, what we'd like to know is if there is, in fact, no government guarantee, if it goes away, what are some of the results of that?
Well, you know, there's a lot of balls in the air right now as far as the government considering a number of different proposals, many of which in reaction to the financial crisis that we've recently been through. And, you know, at least my perspective is that many are a little late to the party as far as enacting true reform. I kind of joke that when the Wall Street stopped buying, the really awful, or not, I shouldn't say awful, what came to be known as awful mortgages, the ones that didn't perform well, you know, a lot of the crisis really was fixed. And I think if you look towards solutions going forward, at least my sense is that we need to look to that history and the causes of what happened there in 2006 and 2007 as we craft solutions. So I'm not one that believes that the solution really lies in getting rid of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
That's interesting. Joe, let's get you in on this discussion.
Yeah, there is so much good that comes from that structure. The good that I'm thinking about is consistency of documentation, consistency of standards and delivery, and the communication from the originator to the servicer to the investor, that it just should not go away. Granted, the entities are likely bankrupt, or I mean, certainly they're not viable entities. But the people and the processes and the system sure do need to be preserved.
I would agree. I think Fannie and Freddie were set up for reasons, and that if you remember, you know, and I know David, you referred to the government guarantee going away, and at least in my first years in this business, there was no express government guarantee, but there was an implicit one, and the market certainly reacted to that, and that became express, obviously, when the government ended up the federal government is standing in and taking over the debt responsibilities of Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac, and again, I think the solution lies in understanding that history. eventually these organizations, given the production of the last several years, which has been truly, you know, vanilla, very safe type of product, these organizations are going to become wildly profitable again. What really brought them down was their forays into the Alt-A market and non-standard type mortgages. So similar to how we dealt with the RTC years and years ago, dealing with that past hangover, if you will, of that non-standard Alt-A type product is going to be critical to, if you will, cleaning up the balance sheets of these companies. And that can be done in a number of different ways. But the other reform that I would advocate needs to be in place moving forward is to restrict these organizations once they become private again, in however form, to restrict them from moving off of their central mission, which is these standard vanilla type mortgages.
Well, do you see the loss of standards and underwriting the documentation really affecting the secondary markets, or are we so well established, are we as an industry so well advanced that is just not realistic, Don?
Oh, I think it's very realistic. If we move away from an environment where you have some sort of standardization body, you really do, as you mentioned before, kind of go back into the world where you're in a portfolio-type lending situation or a private mortgage-backed security lending situation where standards can be set by, you know, different entities that are either purchasing and holding the loans or the entities that are securitizing those loans. And so you do lose that standardization that you get from Fannie and Freddie and certainly with Ginnie, which obviously is in a little different posture because of the government, the express government backing of those loans. And so, yeah, I think that would be a large blow to not only the liquidity in the industry, but just the ability to get business done, the ability to write mortgages. That standardization is important. And I think the government will, you know, my sense is that cooler heads will prevail as we move through some of this reform discussion.
You know, those of us with gray hair will remember the environment that preceded, you know, the very large use of Fannie and Freddie, like when your outlets were through participation agreements with an insurance company here or there, and boy, those were very inefficient, but they were all you had. So you had to negotiate separate purchase and sale agreements with each participant. You had to understand their requirements for delivery and their underwriting guidelines and their servicing guidelines. And Don, what you just were talking about reminded me very much of that environment where you lose a tremendous amount of efficiency in order to deliver a product, and then that product's not there consistently.
And so you're constantly
chasing.
Yeah, and, you know, we lead the world in the liquidity in our mortgage banking industry, and to lose that edge would be a big mistake in my mind. And having the ability to have that liquid market. For example, you know, going back to the environment which you describe, you know, taking us back 25 years or so from where we are now, maybe about that, I would guess.
Mm-hmm.
And you have more of a private mortgage-backed security market. You don't have the price discovery that, as a hedging company, we rely on a very liquid mortgage-backed security market to be able to discover the prices, to be able to put on an efficient hedge, to eliminate, if not reduce, what we call basis risk, which is the fact that the price indication that Andy referred to earlier that investors will put out moves in a way that correlates strongly with the securities that are being used to hedge that. And once we lose that, Joe, you're absolutely right. We start to lose a lot of efficiency in our marketplace and introduce additional risk.
Well, Don, on that point, let me jump into the TVA real quick here. So, Don, it's great having you on the show. It's great seeing you a couple weeks ago.
Thanks, Andy.
Yeah, continuing on that point, let's say that we don't have Fannie and Freddie, and we don't have now a capital markets of Fannie, Freddie, Ginnie, MBSs. What do we do about locks? How would a lock even happen?
Well, I think, again, you know, it takes us back 20, 25 years. We go into a situation where if you're not originating that loan to put it in your own portfolio, your lock would be based on some sort of agreement or prospective agreement that you would have in where you're going to sell that loan, which would be again, as Joe referred to, more of a kind of a direct sale into a company that would be portfolioing those. So the lock would have to be based on the terms of whatever that sale and whoever that investor was willing to purchase that. Very
what
different
about
environment.
What about 30-year loans then? Those go
well,
away?
Well, if that's what the investor
great question.
Was. Yeah, I mean, if the investor was interested in purchasing, yeah, I think, you know, Andy, that is a great question. You look across the pond, as it were, into the British market, and you really don't have 30-year mortgages. You have a much, much shorter time frame type of mortgage, and most of it is held in portfolio by the banks that originate them. So when I referred to us leading the world in mortgage liquidity, there's a really good example of a very different market across the pond, if you will.
Alice, we've got a number of consequences that we'd realize as a result of a world without Fannie and Freddie, many of which are going to be operational. Love to have you bring you into this discussion. I mean, if we were truly looking at a non-world without a Fannie and Freddie, Alice, what do you see as the future of what we would have to deal with?
Well, two things come to my mind that are operational related. I mean, I know the Mortgage Bankers Association, for example, when you try and draw out what the diagram looks like, you know, in this new market compared to what we have versus what we did have. I mean, one of the lines you already mentioned would go away, and that's, you know, kind of the private securitization by a McG. But what about underwriting? You know, if we have all these entities with all their different requirements, does underwriting now have to be something now done at that entity? Do we still have such a thing as delegated underwriting? The other thing I'm noticing is then what about the fact that an FHA, for example, right now can be sold to a Fannie Freddie? Would that limit government loan delivery only directly into a Ginnie Mae pool? You know, how would that market now work from an operational standpoint?
Well, and then the AUS systems, I mean, what becomes
right.
a standard? I mean, they
right.
Fannie and Freddie, for all of their consequences of what they've done wrong, they have brought us some wonderful technology. Don, weigh in on that. If in a world without Fannie and Freddie's DU or LP, how does that affect and impact the secondary markets?
Well, you know, I think Alice is exactly right. It starts what we do with our client companies starts with operations. And when they have, Andy mentioned before, the importance of clean data and bringing information through with our partners at Optimal Blue, we're able to scrub loans for eligibility throughout the process. If we're dealing in a world where we have non-standard or non-uniform guidelines, which, you know, to some extent we do now, but there's always that foundation of the Fannie Freddie guidelines, then we've introduced a lot more uncertainty into the product or into the operations as well as the project. And so it just becomes a much more uncertain market, whether a loan goes into a specific security. There's certainly going to be requirements by the securitizing entity that it be underwritten under certain guidelines, communicating those guidelines all the way back through, as Alice mentioned, back through to the operational side, becomes logistically much more difficult than it is right now.
Joe, I know we talk about, no AUS is some of the standard, lack of standardization, but there's a consequence of the warehouse lender, would it not, Joe?
Well, anyone who's borrowed, who's used a warehouse line lately knows that they're pretty particular about the loans you put in that line and the takeouts that are on the other side of that line. And if you lose the standardization that you can say that, yeah, this is a Fannie eligible loan and there are any number of different buyers for this loan, will warehouse lines be as comfortable making loans to mortgage bankers that it can, you know, if it were to be that they can say this is only this loan's going to New York Life as a specialty product. Now the bank's got to underwrite due diligence on New York Life and I'm making that up. I don't know if there's a New York Life, but whatever.
Well, there is.
So it would become far more complicated for the warehouse banks to feel comfort in lending to those loans that are in between origination and purchase.
Without question. Andy, our firm goes out and does a lot on the warehouse due diligence. We're out there looking at these companies and their best practices. You know, what's your thoughts if we have a world with no Fannie and Freddie as it relates to the warehouse lenders?
I would substantially complicate the warehouse borrowing process, because now the warehouse lender is going to have some level of gaining comfort on their counterparty risk from the investors. And it, without a standardization for the product, the delivery, the rate commitment, it means everyone's got to, it's all going to get looked at. And so all this is going to add additional process, it's going to add additional time, it's going to add additional cost, probably substantial additional cost because of the non-standardization that this would throw into the market. It would be a very difficult and I think in many respects devastating to the market for people to go down this path. And you know, Don made a great point earlier. Some of the real owie that Freddie and Freddie are still dealing with resulted from their investment in their non-traditional lending arena. And people keep forgetting that. If Fannie and Freddie had just done what Fannie and Freddie are supposed to do, we wouldn't have this problem with them today. And so we're trying to throw the baby out with the bathwater. Because there's a lot of elements to what they do that are really essential. And as we've just talked about it here today, you know, the world without Fannie and Freddie becomes very murky and very costly to the consumer. And, you know, it kind of reminds me of Alice talked about this before. It's kind of like this whole notion of getting rid of Fannie and Freddie is kind of like when somebody said, you know what, alcohol's bad, let's make it illegal, let's bring in prohibition. And so they did for a while, and, you know, we'll know how that worked out. And so, and Alice talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think cooler heads need to prevail, and let's get a handle on what's happening here.
Well, you know, Andy, you mentioned one thing. This is Don again. You mentioned one thing about the cost going up, and ultimately, this leads to a greater cost in borrowing for the consumer. And you
That's
know, we speak about
yeah.
it from our perspective as lenders and say, oh, it's going to be more difficult to do business, blah blah blah. But the real piece that I think the legislators need to be aware of is that this is going to increase the friction to borrowing, and we all know that not everybody should own a home. We learned that pretty well over the last decade. But there are people who need to buy homes, and we do a great job in this country to enable them to do that. And if we choke the market off so much, it's going to change how our housing industry works.
It does, without a doubt. Folks, we've got Don Brown, co-president, founder of Secondary Interactive. Don's got extensive background in the secondary markets, and we're going to continue the discussion about the future of the secondary markets as it relates to the future of the mortgage industry in just a moment. We'll be back after this brief break.
PMI Mortgage Insurance Company is the clear choice for your higher LTV conventional borrowers. Unlike FHA, PMI offers a choice of flexible premium plans to fit the individual needs of each borrower, from a one-time upfront cost with no renewal premium to a monthly plan with no upfront charges. PMI's premium plans recognize larger down payment and good credit history, saving your clients what can at times be thousands of dollars. PMI also provides lenders with fast electronic submission tools to increase efficiencies. Mortgage insurance is more relevant than ever, so it's important to utilize a mortgage insurer who's committed to the business for the long term. It is vital that you work with a company whose core competency is credit risk management and bring that wealth of knowledge to your firm. At PMI, mortgage insurance is their only business, so they have to get it right. PMI's mission is to create sustainable homeownership opportunities. To learn more about how PMI solutions can assist your business, please contact your PMI representative today or call 800-966-4PMI, 800-966-4PMI.
Welcome back, everybody. We've got Don Brown, president of Secondary Interactive, a hedge management firm that provides data to companies. One thing that Andy said earlier in the discussion, Don, in his piece, was the importance of data and the importance of having accurate data. You having be able to do your job, you have got to have consistent data. Do you see a world where the secondary markets are it's a free-for-all? In other words, we don't have Fannie and Freddie there. Do you see the data coming at you is going to become more complicated?
You know, that's a great question, and Andy did make some tremendous points in his earlier point. We live by a mantra here at Secondary Interactive about good data making good hedging, or put the other way, bad data makes bad hedging.
The other way around, yeah.
Either way you want to look at it. And I mean, that comes from understanding you know, what you're receiving, making sure there's good system integration between different systems, and some of the pieces that we've put in play, again, between our partners at Optimal Blue, Secondary Interactive, and some of our loan origination system partners such as DMD, DataTrack, allow for seamless transfer of data throughout the system. you know, to get to your specific question, David, I think it just becomes more complicated. Where we are compared to where we were, say, 10, 15, 20 years ago, is that the systems in place, the technology in your place, is so much further ahead than it even was, you know, when I first got into the business 10, 15 years ago. And so that's not going to go away with some sort of legislative a stroke of the pen. What will go away is what we've been talking about, is some of the standardization. And so that's why I say the data gets more complicated, but we will have, the technology in place so that, assuming the data gets entered in the right system correctly, it will still flow through. The analysis and use of that data is going to make the business much more complicated. So I think actually the systems, you know, really the systems that are in place now are going to make, you know, assuming we go back 25 years or 20 years as far as a no Freddie Fannie world, the systems will be a difference from where we were 20, you know, in that previous market.
There's no question that it's going to be a complicated world, but, you know, like one of our sponsors, Del Mar Database, DMD, you talked about them and the importance of that. I really see, so long as people have one of those kind of systems, they're quick to react, they're great at providing and feeding data into your system. Alice, I want to jump out to you. I know you've got, as we kind of look at the clock here, we're kind of winding down on this segment. Alice, what questions would you ask Don as it relates to the future of the secondary markets? Anything floating around in your mind? Some leading questions?
Well, I think just, you know, do you see that these proposals, that the MBA's, you know, approach to this is one that most people seem to be able to use as a foundation and work from, or is this still all up in the air and we have no idea where it's going to land?
Well, anytime, I can't remember exactly where I remember this quote from, but anytime the legislature's in session, everything's up in the air. So you know, something to worry about. And
I'm not going to let you disclaim that, Larry.
No. I'll get more specific. Texas has a great plan and lets the legislature meet only every other year, which
right.
is a wonderful thing. But, there's a number of things floating around. You mentioned a number of different legislative initiatives that are happening. I read about a different one this morning. I think it's H.R. 940, which talk about covered bonds, which is kind of a middle ground between the TBA world and a private mortgage-backed security world, which may offer some solutions in place. One thing I was very encouraged about, I recently had an opportunity to hear new MBA President David Stevens speak in Austin at the Texas Mortgage Bankers Association. And here's a gentleman who is not only an industry veteran from an operational perspective, but he has some great Washington internal experience, having been involved with HUD for a number of years. And he comes into that leadership position at the MBA with a tremendous amount of enthusiasm that he's able to spread around the industry, go to Washington with a little bit different story rather than, oh, woe is us mortgage bankers. But, hey, we're trying to be a partner with you to help keep the mortgage, the housing industry strong in America. I was very impressed by his approach. And so I think with that type of attitude in place, that's really going to help get to the point where, you know, as Andy and maybe I referred to earlier, that cooler heads will prevail.
There's no question that we are needing to all react and get on there. Alice talks about this regularly. I was chuckling when you were commenting. Says as long as the legislature is in session, we are definitely in trouble. Joe, let's go out to you as we get close to wrapping up this segment, and then we'll get to Andy. Joe, your thoughts?
Well, the one thing that we haven't talked about is QRM and its state of, you know, it's still being formulated. Certainly, as it was proposed, it would have a significant impact on the ability to make loans, and you know, maybe not as directly in the secondary market, but it certainly would have affected the secondary market. So, you know, it's in a position where you have an ability to be a part of the outcome. And it's important for everyone to respond to the proposals and to make sure that they weigh in on this, because that will have a significant impact, obviously, on the amount of production you can do post-QRM if it's not changed.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely correct. The QRM, Alice has been talking about it. We've all been visiting on that. Don, what do you think about What's your thoughts on QRM at this point?
Well, you know, it's very active. You're right. There's a lot of discussion going on around the industry. As proposed, as Joe mentioned, really would choke off the ability of people. It almost puts us in a direction which, at least the rhetoric out in the marketplace, is really not the direction where I think politicians want us to go. And that's feeding the too big to fail. And if you require such intense capital requirements, you're going to prevent smaller or less well-capitalized players in the mortgage industry, which leads, you know, to the larger players getting even bigger. So I would hope that point is being discussed in Washington. I certainly welcome the opportunity to participate personally and hope that everybody else takes advantage of those opportunities. And we need to make that point to our congressmen and senators so that we don't get to that situation.
Yeah, there's no question that getting our voice heard on all these important topics is probably one of the most. And a lot of listeners who are dialed in and listening to us each and every week are going, yeah, what difference am I going to make? I weighed in on the LO compensation, sure it didn't seem to do any good. You can't let that thinking prevail, folks. You've got to be involved in writing and listen to Alice's segment. She gives you lots of websites to go to. We can email those to you if you would like us to. Stay involved. Andy Schell, Profit Doctor, what's your thoughts as we get going to the door here in a minute?
Well, we've got VOEs and VODs, and I think we have a new one now. I think we have a VFD. You know what a VFD is? It's vote for Don.
Yeah.
I mean, I realize this. Don's a politician, he's running for public office before, and I think our new – I'm going to move to Colorado just so I can vote for Don for Colorado's senator so he can go to Washington and fix all this and get people that don't have a clue what they're doing listening to somebody who does.
Andy, you're very kind. I'm not sure I want to jump into that pool, but I would just add to that cards and letters, as a former elected official, and I was very much on the local level, but cards and letters matter. And the more you hear from your constituents, it moves the needle for those who are sitting in the elected office. So, David, I would 100% agree with what you're saying.
Well, we got to get the voice heard. Don, how can people learn more about you and your company? What's your website again?
We are at www.secondaryinteractive.com. If you go there, there's a wealth of information on who we are, as well as Hedging 101 type introduction to hedging. We try to take a very educative approach with our clients and all the way from those who are making the transition from best efforts to mandatory, give them, like I said, an intro to basics of hedging strategy discussion. We have a very detailed implementation program where we work with clients to make sure that they're prepared to succeed in hedging from a policy standpoint and a relationship standpoint before they start. And we also work all the way up with very experienced lenders who can essentially manage their pipeline themselves. So, again, www.secondaryinteractive.com.
.com. That'd be good. Thank you. So, and the phone number, direct line to, if they need to call in and want to speak with you directly, the phone number there is, again, what?
303-483-2190. And David and all, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to participate here today.
Well, it's good to have you on the program, Don. Have yourself a great week, and we look forward to having you back. Folks, we've been talking with Don Brown, the founder and president of Secondary Interactive, a great source. Andy Schell was just out in his offices, and he says, you know what, David, they have really got some cool tools. It's very, very important. We appreciate you being with us, Don. Have a great week.
Thank you very much, everybody.
We're going to be continuing to have our discussion on the future of mortgage banking. We're going to be going into a number of other aspects of it next week. We're looking in at the covered bond issue. I think that's really a development that's starting to, as Alice reported, is going to be getting more attention, and we definitely want to get their get more perspective on that. We're going to try to get Mercy Jimenez of the Covered Bond Report on the radio program next week. Stay tuned. We appreciate you being a part of the program each and every week. Special thank you to PMI, DMD, and all the sponsors that are part of the program. And we say a special thank you to Alice, Joe, and Andy who are being a part of this. A lot of time goes into it, folks. Have a great day, and look forward to talking to you next – well, actually, not next week, the following week, 4th of July. Happy 4th of July, everybody.
This has been Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.